Good evening and welcome to the Town of Discovery Bay Community Services District regular meeting. At this time, I'd like to have everybody please stand up with me for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
President Still.
Present.
Vice President Graves.
I am here.
Director Madison.
Here.
Director Simon.
Here.
Director Tatro.
Here.
Thank you. At this time, I'd like to open public comments. During public comments, the public may address the board on any issue within the authority's jurisdiction, which is not on the agenda. The public may comment on any item on the agenda that is before the board for consideration. Any person wishing to speak must come up and speak from the podium. There's going to be no dialogue between the board and the commenter. Any clarifying questions from the board must go through the chair. So if anybody would like to come up, please. At this time, I'd like to close public comment and turn it over to staff. Council.
We're going to go ahead and move from the first part of the agenda on the Public Financing Authority into the regular part of the agenda at this point in time. Legal counsel Cameron Weiss was delayed by traffic and will be here momentarily. So we're going to go ahead and move on to presentations at this point. Mark Armstrong is here with Pantages Properties to give an update on their draft EIR process. The 292-unit subdivision is currently winding its way through the county over on the west side of Discovery Bay. And so, Mark, if you're ready to go, we've got the map up on the screen for you. And welcome.
Thank you. Mark Armstrong with Pantages at Discovery Bay.
Hey, Mark.
How are you guys doing?
Good.
I was asked by your general manager to give an update as to where we are in the project now that the draft EIR has been released by the county. The county had a public hearing Monday for the zoning administrator to go over the comments that we might want to give early to the draft EIR, and there are a few people that are going to make those comments. Expect that we will be before the Planning Commission sometime in fall. This is a general plan amendment and a rezoning plan development with the final development plan. That's the intended map. So that means it goes to the Planning Commission to make a decision on the subdivision map and the final development plan and the actual subdivision map, and that the town can make a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors on the general plan amendment. Related rezoning applications. This kind of shows the general location for the property. And you can see a bunch of different block letters designations up here. For example, this one is OS. This one is SH. SH is single family high density. And that's SM, single family medium density. And there's a water designation. The way the county operates their general plan is every particular use on the property has to have it. You don't just designate the whole thing as residential. You designate it depending upon what it is. This requires that kind of specificity. So if there are any changes to the project, somebody decides they want to change this project around, something Mark has expressed some concern about from time to time, it would require a redesignation of the property by way of general plan amendment, not to mention just other hurdles that one would have to get involved in. This project has a few key points that have to be addressed. is the floodplain of properties essentially below the existing floodplain. The state of California has adopted a higher floodplain now based on their review of climate change potential effects and rise in sea level as a result. So our floodplain has to be even higher in some locations. The only practical way to be able to develop this property is to excavate these bays and coves to get the dirt you need to be able to move them up higher. So it's not feasible to bring all that dirt in. You recall Ravenswood was essentially an import dirt project. It's a lot smaller than our project and didn't have nearly the flood elevation issues that we have to deal with. That's one of the key factors in how we develop the property. We're developing this in association with, in cooperation with Reclamation District 800, as you are aware, because Rec 800 is interested in widening Kellogg Creek at the mouth of Kellogg Creek, where it intersects with Indian Slough, because in that location it's like 9,200 feet in width. Those of you who travel by boat know it well. And during tidal changes, it gets a pretty stiff current going. So that current causes a couple of problems. One, difficult boating and boating safety, swimmer boater safety as well. And it also creates current that causes sedimentation that causes Rec 800 to have to dredge a lot more than they otherwise would have to. So we're working with Rec 800 and we'll be completing a Army Corps permitting process to widen Kellogg Creek jointly as joint permittees. You get some special consideration through the federal water laws and Corps laws when it comes to the dredging and grading that was done in the U.S. waterways that that impact the use of the water, boating and that sort of thing. It's different than if you are just doing a development and have some wetlands that you want to fill. That's considered separate. We'll end up with more favorable treatment with having Rec 800 participating in with the Corps in doing a widening that has some serious boating waterway. The project continues to be, you can see the date up there, October 2009. This is the plan that was subject to, that is in the draft EIR. It hasn't changed since that time. The plan calls for 116 waterfront lots with docks, deep water lots with docks, and 176 traditional single-family homes. Of them, about 125 of those traditional homes are about 6,000 square foot lots. And those are primarily, I can show the bottom of that.
Yeah, I'm getting there. Yeah.
Primarily along the back edge there where the Ravenswood and Lakeshore. And you know, one thing that your board has commented on, your staff had commented on from the outset of our project was that the lots backing up to make sure maybe would be generally reflective of the lot sizes that are there. Don't make them smaller. There's 6,000 square foot lots, which is essentially the lot size in those communities as well. There are about 45 larger 10, 11,000, 12,000 square foot lots that are the traditional kind of lots that are located primarily along that open space emergent marsh location. One of our original plans called for developing additional bays and essentially developing all the way up to the East Contra Costa Irrigation District channel. When we went to the Corps for a preliminary review, it was pretty obvious that they wanted to preserve that emergent marsh and wetland area, so we modified the plan accordingly. It's about 45 acres of open space in that location. The open space, also there, that's location for the Marine Patrol substation that we've talked about before. Tahoe had encouraged us to, and we did talk with the sheriff, and the sheriff, lieutenants involved in it, the captains involved in it. They very much like to see a marine patrol substation in that location because of the high degree of traffic in the general area and the quick access to fast water in an area where there's high boating activity. The marine patrol substation with docks will be constructed by our company. The district will man it, essentially, and property will be dedicated to Contra Costa County. The addition we have, as we've talked about before, the sheriff committed the sheriff to through the draft ER process and with the sheriff to fund through a P1 district, not a P5 district, a P1 district, which is much more specifically tailored. There's P5 issues that have happened here from time to time. But we would fund a deputy sheriff for marine use and surface patrol use as well. This project is a gated community for car access, but county staff encourage us to, we've encouraged it from folks in the community as well, to make sure that we provide pedestrian and bicycle access through the site. So there will be pedestrian and bicycle gate access separate from the car gate, road gate. They'll be able to get in here. There'll be a 8-foot sidewalk over this way, an 8-foot sidewalk over here, as opposed to the traditional width of the sidewalk. And this emergency vehicle access that goes around the open space and goes out to the Marine Patrol substation will have an 8-foot paved trail in the middle. Otherwise, it'll be a gravel shoulder surface. And that'll provide the direct access to the water and that open space, something that the Discovery Bay West side of town can't take advantage of that well. So we're going to be providing that to be essentially our recreational contribution to this community. Your county staff also, actually this is Captain Consuras, the funeral director who lives out this way and has a lot of several good ideas from her. One of the concerns that she had was making sure that when you're walking or biking or driving a car in this area, on these streets, you know you're next to the water, you're near the water. I mean, Discovery Bay, you can drive through Discovery Bay because people have solid side yard fences. You don't know, except in a few locations, that you're on the water, at least by viewing. And in this instance, we will be having our side yards will be our side yard fences will be a wrought iron kind of fence, open fencing, and on at least one side there will be a restriction in terms of the kinds of uses and height of essentially will be grass area and smaller plants, so you can actually, as you're driving down, you'll end up being able to see through every other side yard fence that you're on the water. Again, that was a county staff suggestion, and then we followed through on. We have I've followed closely, and you've seen me at the meeting with your wastewater and water master plans and studies and the work that you've done there. We appreciate all that effort. It's been an important step forward. Your staff has kept us up to date on the capacity fee study that's ongoing and provided us with some input in that regard. So far, it may sound reasonable that the approach is being taken. We're going to be responsible for our share fair of the work. The costs, there'll be both as I understand it, a kind of buy-in hookup fee and a new development capacity fee that we will be paying our fair share for the capacity that's required to serve new development. And I think your staff is going developing this in a very professional sort of way with very competent consultants. So I think that's my perspective. So that's quick rundown. If anybody has any questions.
I've got two. With the Kellogg Creek, the widening, did I hear you say 90 to 100 feet?
In a couple locations, in one location it's down to 90 to 100 feet. We will have it out to 300 feet.
Okay. And then...
And that takes place by excavating on our side. There's that island piece there we call Pantages Island, and then the mouth of Kellogg Creek there on our main property. That'll be taken back to make it 300 feet. 300 feet is the width that Rec 800 has recommended as a minimum width for boating.
You may or may not know this question. Will that allow the other folks on the other side, on the Discovery Point side, for example, to build out some docks?
They have to get individual permits from Rec 800, and Rec 800 is responsible for it. But
I think that's one of the reasons why we're widening at the same time.
Yes. It provides them with that opportunity. And we've noticed that many of these meetings, there have been more than a few folks from those along that side who have expressed some interest in the project and that element to the project. That's kind of an added with us.
With the current climate of the economy and everything else and the permitting, when do you expect to start putting up some sticks?
Well, we should be through the county process, I think, would be January, February of next year, assuming all goes well. And then we have to complete the remainder of our permitting, mostly with resource agencies and service agencies. We have to also go through LAFCO because we're only partly in your district and we're not in Rec 800, so we have to go through a boundary organization. So we're probably talking 2 or 3 years if all goes well. I would say 2 or 3 years from the date the county board would hopefully approve this.
That's it for me.
I was at the meeting on Monday. I left before they called your project. I didn't see. I thought you'd be in there.
I was there.
That was the biggest crowd I have ever seen in my life. How much public comment did you get on the project?
We had one owner from across Pantages Island, and a representative, the business manager for sheet metal workers.
Were they both negative?
Sheet metal workers just commented and said they're interested in looking at this project. There's a law firm that has been doing a fair amount of work over the years trying to convince using the environmental review process as a encouragement for developers and builders into project labor agreements with their unions, and their lawyers are doing that at this point. They're going to comment on the draft EIR. The other commenter was positive. He wanted to make sure that it was 300 feet.
I know on the part of that project you're going to have joint docks, you're going to have community docks. Where is that on the map? Where does it show in there?
There are a couple locations. Here's one. Here's another one, kind of on these corners. You got the maximum is 3 lots sharing the same dock. Mm-hmm. But some of these places where it got kind of
pinched.
Awkward, pinched at the end, we could have just said make them one dock, but.
You're not doing. I know on Sandpoint when they did the. You actually have to walk from your house, and they have a community dock that goes straight out of.
No,
that's not what you're doing.
No.
Just several owners will be sharing a dock.
Sharing the same dock, and hopefully they'll get along.
Well, those are tight corners, so yeah.
Yeah, like I said, we could have just made one or two of the lots non-waterfront lots, but those homeowners are really frustrated being on the water yet not having the dock.
The deep water lots, what do you think the average square footage is going to be at most?
Probably 35 to 5. Yeah. We really haven't resolved the question yet. And in part because there's a strong possibility a lot of those will be custom lots. So, you know, I can get up and say what I think they might be, but...
I'm assuming the 20 lots will be the big houses, I guess.
That's correct.
Okay. Any other questions?
Just one quick one.
Sure.
How many deep water and how many off water?
116 deep water, 176 traditional lots off the water. And of those 176, 45 of them are, 40 of them are the larger lots that you see along the Amazon marsh area. They're probably about 10, 11,000 square foot lots.
Right.
And the remainder about 6,000 square foot lots. Okay?
All right. Mind if I have the public?
Oh, sure.
Before you go there, President Steele, I'd like to just mention that staff is reviewing the DEIR at this point in time. We're putting our comments into legal counsel for their final look at it. It is going forward with respect to the 45-day review period, which expires on what day, Mark?
28.
So we've got about 10 days left. And our comments are solely related to those areas in which we have direct input with respect to the water wastewater recreational activities.
Thank you. At this time, I'd like to ask the public to come forward with any questions or comments, please.
Phil, please. I just have one quick question. I think the project looks fantastic. I hope it's finally approved in a few years. You had mentioned that if the project's approved, that you would be able to fund a sheriff position. I'm wondering how long that funding would take place. How long is that funding?
Mr. Armstrong, that question was for you.
I'm sorry, I was talking in class. What's the question?
I wanted to understand the funding for the sheriff's position. You indicated that if the project is approved, you would fund a sheriff position.
The funding would come by way of what's called a P1 lease service district, and homeowners would be assessed the cost of that sheriff, which I think is like the last time I talked to the sheriff's department about it, the cost for one deputy sheriff I think is around $175,000 a year.
Right, so it's ongoing funding.
It's ongoing funding, and it's impossible to fund that in advance.
Right.
One judgment call we made was to have this needs to be a gated community for a lot of reasons. But in lieu of having security on site, having a guard at the gate, it made good sense, especially when the marine patrol substation came in, to just spend money on that, have the homeowner spend the money on a real deputy sheriff who's going to be there on a consistent basis and would do a lot to ward off.
Right. Right. So, best of your knowledge, would it be a 24/7 opportunity?
No, the sheriff has said it's not going to be 24/7. It's going to be consistent use. We haven't defined, once the P1 process gets underway, which is a public process that has to be adopted by the board of supervisors, those details will be worked out. But it's pretty consistent use. Service, and they want to use that marine patrol substation. They just didn't want to commit to having somebody there, as you said, 24/7.
Right, and so that substation won't be able to go off.
Yeah, that'd be a little bit overkill.
Right.
Good. All right.
Sure. Anybody else?
No.
All right. Well, great. I'll just turn it back over to our council.
Thank you, President Steele, board members. Tonight you also have agendized or noticed meeting of the Discovery Bay Public Financing Authority simultaneously. Your bond counsel, Mr. Weiss, is present, and what I would recommend is that you now take a recess of this board meeting and then convene the Financing Authority board, which is on your separate agenda.
All right, let's move forward with that, then we'll take a recess on our general meeting and start the other meeting. Again, everybody, a reminder to use the microphones tonight. We have a good group out here tonight, and then we have our front podium here. There's also a microphone there to speak into. So at this this time, I'd like to turn it over to our staff.
If I may, Mr. President, since this agenda does contain public comment, you may dispense with roll call and pledge of allegiance, however you do need to invite public comment.
Thank you for clarifying. Again, we'll open it up for public comment to this special meeting, please. Anybody like to come forward? All right, we'll now close public comment and turn it over to staff, please.
Thank you, Mr. President, members, or Mr. Chairman, and members of the Financing Authority. This evening, Cameron Weiss from the Weiss Law Firm is here to present a report to you this evening regarding the adoption of resolution that the Governing Board of Discovery Bay Public Financing Authority declaring officers providing for the date of its regular meetings and directing the filing of cert notices. And Cameron, can you go ahead and make that presentation this evening?
Thank you. Well, thank you. And good evening, Mr. President, members of the board. I'm honored to be here again. And certainly in this inaugural event of the first meeting of the JPA. So bringing it to order and holding your first meeting is necessary, obviously, for us to get to ultimately at your next meeting. It's going to be a next important step for the Public Financing Authority to take its first real action to conduct business. And we'll get into that a little bit. But just for purposes of the resolutions in front of you, It is going to go ahead and set in motion the JPA, the Joint Powers Agreement, which was approved by the Board of Directors of the Community Services District in its July meeting. What this meeting is, in essence, is that inaugural meeting that sets up and follows through with that Joint Powers Agreement and names the president of the Community Services District Board as the chairperson of the authority. The vice president of the CSD would be the vice chairperson of the authority. Your executive director for the authority will be your general manager of your community services district, and the finance manager is going to be the treasurer auditor of this of the public financing authority. There are a few housekeeping items that are in order, and staff is. And it will be pursuing those. I will be guiding staff along with general counsel on how to go ahead and file with the state agency a couple of forms that need to be filed to make this official from a documentary standpoint, a public noticing standpoint. And also there will be at least a minimum $500 bond for, or $5,000 bond, I apologize, for the treasurer auditor that's going to be necessary, because there won't be any money that's being transferred or handled by the authority, but the government code does call for a bond for the treasurer of the authority, so we'll be taking that action as well. But from the board's standpoint this evening, if you adopt the resolution, what you're doing is following through with what the Community Service District Board has requested, holding the first meeting, naming those officers, causing the filings that I referred to for staff to go ahead and follow through with those to make everything official. T's are crossed, I's are dotted. You'll have legal jurisdiction to go ahead at the next time that you open the Public Financing Authority to go ahead and accept business, normal regular business, which we anticipate will be business pertaining to the bond offering that you're informed of. So I'd be happy to answer any questions, but in essence, that's a general staff.
Go ahead. Just for clarification, hi Cameron, how are you?
Yes, sir.
You made the long trek up, huh? Clarification purposes, in your letter to General Manager Howard, you refer to JPA 01, but that is synonymous with PFA 01?
It is.
Just a different title for the same? Okay.
It really is, yeah.
Yeah, Public Finance Authority as opposed to Joint Boards. Okay.
Yeah.
Just want to make sure we're talking about the same thing.
Exactly. And I think that it's really going to depend on your books and how you want to label, just as you label your normal CSD resolutions, whatever you choose as your first, whether it's PFA or JPA, that'll probably carry through the years until somebody changes it.
I just would suggest that we make that decision before making our vote, so it's consistent throughout the.
That's a good idea. Yeah.
so it doesn't change somewhere. And then,
exactly.
Other than that, I have nothing else.
Okay. We had set up a committee and we'll see it, but from what I see that you're changing that committee, we're not where we are.
No, the committee you're referring to, I believe, Kirk DeTetro, is the finance subcommittee.
Okay.
And that is made up of Vice President Graves and yourself.
Yeah.
The two of you will still be pursuing those roles.
Okay.
As a result of that. As a result of that. The action tonight is just for ongoing. In fact, I had a conversation today with Dan Masiello as well as Vice President Graves on that. And the question was, when will we be getting involved in that? And my response was, very soon. So it'll be coming.
Okay. I just want to clarify that.
And I guess I would clarify also that the board is this, just because the chair and vice chair have been named, this board is the ruling board.
Yes, that's correct.
They just don't clarify the other three directors in this document.
Exactly.
It does say the board in here, so I believe. So
it's all board decisions.
So, and then staff is staff for this committee just as it is for this board.
That's correct.
It mimics it or shadows this board.
It really does.
Mm-hmm.
And from the standpoint of, I mean, the primary design, of course, of the Public Finance Authority is to issue bonds, to act as the actual issuer of the bonds, because as we spoke about at last meetings, the law gives you a big advantage. Instead of having to go to state JPA mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. use their joint powers authority, you are going to act as the issuer of your bonds through the authority's name and recognition in your board. However, that doesn't change all the important steps that your CSD board and finance committee still have to go through to get to the point where we're even ready to bring this to a final authority. So there's going to be another district board meeting that's going to be necessary, at least one, and that's going to have all the legal documents that are going to have to be approved by that district board, that finance committee. If those go through, and only if those go through, then it would be presented to the authority for the blessing for a bond offering. It would act as the issuer. So, yeah.
And also, for clarification, I may be going out of bounds here, I'm not sure, but as I recall your diagram that we looked at several times with how everything works in JPA and the trust fund, and there is a trust fund outside of the CSD that is responsible for dispersing those funds based on very defined instructions and regulations, correct? So
yeah.
It's not the fox isn't watching the hen house here. This is just
you're right.
Okay.
You're absolutely right, and I'll just briefly touch on that because, again, it will be a community services district bond issue for all intents and purposes because all the covenants, all the legal implications are all really pointed at the CSD board. The authority is merely acting as, like you say, a shadow agency for purposes of just getting through the legal requirements of the law.
No.
And what happens is when the bond proceeds are actually, even though they're going to be issued through the authority, there's going to be this trust fund. We call it just a construction fund, but it's going to be with a major bank. It's going to have, you know, a list of about seven things that each time a check is written, the treasurer, general manager has to go through each of those checklists and make sure that they can cross them all. If they get to the bottom, cross them all, then a check can be written from that trust fund of that major bank. So there's a checks and balances system that's set up in that way. So.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I said it before. Yeah. I mean, it's not.
All right. Any questions?
Mr. Form, go ahead.
Any public comment? No public comment.
Yeah,
legal. At this point, it would be appropriate for the board to move the action out of order if that's their choice for this hearing.
I would make a motion that we adopt resolution PFA 01-2012, I believe it's, yeah, excuse me, PFA 2012-01.
All those in favor?
Aye.
There is a second item before you tonight relative to the Public Financing Authority, and that's item number two. It's approval of the bylaws of PFA. And Cameron, if you can step back up to the mic and put you on the hot spot there for a second, if you would. Maybe briefly you can review what the bylaws and how those interact with respect to the action just taken.
Well, and your counsel can also chime in at any time, but in essence, the bylaws are much like you would see in a corporate world where you have your articles and then you have your bylaws, and you basically, your joint powers agreement is your, in essence, your articles of your corporation kind of gives you the roadmap, if you will. The bylaws are the minute operating details that from a daily basis, from an operational standpoint, that need to be adhered to make it a legal functioning entity. So it's unless you'd like to get into some of the specifics and so forth, but really that's what it amounts to.
If I may, Mr. President, these are rather streamlined simply because the activities of the authority are limited. As an example, once the bonds are funded, there will be very little activity of this body as opposed to the Board of Directors for the Community Services District. So when you look through it, it should be familiar. It just identifies authorities, clarifies, and repeats, in essence, the officers' duties that are in the JPA, establishes meetings by resolution, which you just did a moment ago, and makes it clear that your parliamentary procedures are Roseburg Rule of Order, which the CSD Board of Directors uses as well. So unless any of you have any questions,
I just want to be clear on 1.2, that the board members, they are going to be the same board, the CSD board, and there's no way for the board to appoint some other group of people on those.
No.
Okay.
No way. No.
I'll make a motion that we adopt the bylaws for the
That's right. We got public comment? No public comment. Thank you.
And I'll second that motion.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, well, at this time,
I would suggest that unless there are any reports that are on the agenda, that you would adjourn this meeting and then resume back to the CSU.
Okay. Forward, and we will now adjourn the PFA meeting, and we're going to move forward with our regularly scheduled general meeting. I don't know what that's where.
They were all marked then.
I think it's
I think they're all pen takers.
Hold on for a second there.
You won't need to sign for a second. Did I miss one?
Yeah,
I apologize.
No problem.
I got your back. Where did I miss back?
The last one.
Oh, I see. We're back with him.
Yes, back to the gate. All right, so we can move forward here. President's report and director's comments. I'll open it up to the directors. Mr. Madison? Anything?
I have nothing. I did attend a couple of meetings over the past couple of weeks since our last meeting. One was the airport committee, and the other was transplant. And stuck around for the bypass authority meeting also for transplant. They're moving along with trying to resolve all those traffic issues along Sand Creek, or crossing Sand Creek, I guess I should say, connecting Highway 4 with the bypass. The land's there. They've had to do some changeover property, but they should be moving along with that rather quickly to try to eliminate those stoplights that you hit along there. With regards to the airport committee, there was a grand opening, per se, or an open house for the new jet hangar over at, thank you, Byron, and the Patriot Jet team went all out. They have about a third of that hangar is theirs. The other two-thirds is for other use and leased to other people. Or maybe it's the other way around.
The other way around.
Two-thirds is theirs and a third is the other people. But it is a shared facility. But if you haven't seen it, it's huge. It's massive. And there was a lot of staff there. Several of the board of directors was there. And it was well done. We got some, to see some nice planes and some nice flyovers and hear kind of what their plans are for the community. The Bay Area skydiving team was nominated for the Tenant Recognition Award from the Byron Airport. We won't know the results of that. The airport's pretty good at trying to recognize their tenants because, like any other facility in today's economy, they're trying to maintain 100% lease rate, and they're struggling to do that. So they do barbecues and other tenant events, and when those happen at Byron, they typically happen over Buchanan. I will try to keep the board informed of that. And then we also received a letter that I will be reading and probably making recommendations to the board if there should be a response with regards to expenditures for monies that are being brought in by the Mariposa Power Plant, considerable funds, close to $1 million, I think, or $987,000, something like that, were released to Byron Airport as part of mitigation. Thank you. Of building that plant, and it's going to substantially improve some of the runways as well as signage and lighting and some other issues over at Byron Airport. So, Byron Airport is a key factor in the state plan of airports because it's so close to the Bay Area, and Homeland Security also is on their radar with regards to if it was emergency use because it does have a good runway. Other than that, I have nothing else to report.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
I just want to let the board know on June 28th I attended the Byron Union School District meeting. They had quite a bit of changeover in the district as far as management and principals. They have a new principal, Tom Jones, at Timber Point.
Tom Jones.
Kelly Bassmagian is going to be the new principal at Excelsior. They also put in a new vice principal at Excelsior. They were able to hire on some new science teachers. They're pushing their science programs, so that's really good to hear. They also approved a budget with adequate reserves. It's very frustrating, again, for them to plan based on the state's financial situation. It appears that the state promises them money, and it may take years and years for them to get the funds that they've allocated for activities. Sometimes these funds never actually even come in, and there's a lot of IOUs out there. Anyway, they're doing a great job as far as managing their budgets. The schools continue to be distinguished, and I just want to applaud them for their work on that. Other than that, I don't have any other meetings I've attended right now. So let's move on to our consent calendar.
I'll make a motion for the consent calendar.
I'll second.
I have a question.
Okay. All right. Come on up.
Bill Pease. Question I had is on item number 9, a company called Bartle and Wells Associates for Financial Advisory Services. I'm just wondering for public information what services they provide.
I'm confused.
I don't know. Item number 9.
He's referring to in the district invoices, I believe, item number 3. Maybe it's identified as item number 9. Bartles and Wells is preparing our capacity to be studying in the district.
Okay.
Okay. Then the other question I had is, you have two maintenance, and I just don't know what the one Valley Crest, which does landscape maintenance. The other is Odyssey Landscape. Yeah. Is that in two different zones?
They do. They both do landscaping in different parts of the community.
All right. Thank you.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All right. New business. Staff brings in.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. The item before you this evening is the annual assessment for the Ravenswood Improvement to District Landscape, Lighting Landscaping Zone number 9. Back in June, the board adopted the work in June of 2012, for Herwood. Engineering prepared the assessment report for Ravenswood, and based on the operating cost of the efforts out there, Ravenswood, the landscaping, the water, that sort of thing. The assessments have been set at $555.75 per parcel. The maximum it could be is $573.19. As a result, the assessment for the parcels for 2012-13 has been reduced minimally to cover only the maintenance costs and the operations associated with this fiscal year. There are adequate reserves in that fund of approximately $121,000, so that if something did come up, we would have resources to make those improvements or correct any damages or anything that might have taken place. So we're looking for the board to adopt that resolution to authorize the levy collection of taxes for the annual assessment for Ravenswood, L&O, zone number 9.
Any questions and comments from the board? Any questions and comments?
Nope.
Any questions or comments from the public?
I make a motion to approve and adopt resolution 2012-16, extension of the levy and collector annual assessment for Ravenswood Improvement District Lighting and Landscape Zone 9, also 2012-2013.
I'll second that.
All those in favor?
Aye.
The next item before you this evening is to authorize the purchase of a 50-foot towable Genie boom lift pursuant to an RFP that staff prepared and put out on the street back in June, RFP number L12-03. It's included as an attachment to this report this evening. As was discussed with the Budget Review Committee as well as this board during the workshop and the budget meetings, the budget's in preparation for the 12-13 budget, we did discuss bringing forward purchase of this piece of equipment. We spend a considerable amount of money each year for arborists and tree trimming and that sort of thing, and it was felt that we could minimize some of those costs if we were to purchase one of the boom lifts ourselves. One of the questions and one of the concerns that I had to do with safety. Wanted to make sure that there were certifications that were in place so that when the employees are up in the boom, that we didn't run afoul of any type of certifications or Cal OSHA requirements. It does come with training, as well as Farron Perez, our Parks Landscape Manager, will be the overseer, if you will. She will have the training experience and the certification to train employees as well as future staff in that. And along with that, Veolia staff as well will be participating in this. And so we're looking forward to the board accepting the bid in the amount of $54,694.39 to Cresco Equipment Rentals.
And where's this manufactured? Is this China?
Part of the equipment, I mean, it's got a Honda engine in it, okay. So I'm assuming that it is either a Japanese product, or I believe that it is manufactured domestically.
Okay.
Wayne, do you recognize me as the chair? I got
Director
a lot of
Simon, please.
What we pay to end, we have contracts out with two large landscaping companies to do our landscaping, and it's not to reduce either one of those contracts. We haven't been doing the only tall trees we have are the palm trees. We haven't been trimming the palm trees. We've done a couple of them. We $50,000 for a boom lift to occasionally do the palm trees. I don't get it.
The last year we spent approximately $30,000 trimming palm trees.
Not just palm trees.
Consistent, and that's planned rotations on our 5-year budget, so that's what needs to happen to keep them.
I believe
assuming that wastewater also uses, has some use for this roof truck also.
Primarily for us, it's going to be the pole lights out in the, at the two different plants. We can't reach them with our standard ladders. We always have to rent a knuckle lift. And then the other item is as we do the water meters, sometimes we have to put repeaters up on light poles to just pick up the signals. And it'd be ideal for us to be able to attach it to the light pole rather than hire a contractor to do that.
Last year, we spent approximately $6,000 in renting equipment that this will replace.
Go ahead. Director Madison.
Thank you, President Steele. I think you and I actually figured out it'd pay for itself in about 3.5 years, didn't we? 2.5 years, 3 years, something like that.
From my side, I think, you know, if he's getting benefit from that as well, then it would be a faster ROI. And then we're also going to be billing county zones for the time spent, because they're going to spend in those zones. So you're actually collecting money on it as well, reimbursing that money. So.
What is the expected use life? How many years should we expect to get out of this? 10 years, 20 years?
I believe it's about 20. We're not consistently using it all the time. I did talk about that, and I don't want to...
Right. Quite some time, though.
Yeah.
All right. All right.
Any public comment?
I would move that we authorize the purchase of a 50-foot towable Genie Boom lift pursuant to RFP number L12-03.
I'll second that. All those in favor?
Aye.
The last action item for you this evening, President and members of the board, is to authorize the design and engineering contracts with Kerwin Engineering for the Oxidation Ditch Project, Clarifier Project, Pump Station W, completion of solar dryers and SCADA upgrades. These projects have been included in the master plan. They've been discussed at length. The total approximately design and engineering funds, approximately $868,000. It is a significant amount of money. However, when you look at standard industry standards, about 15% for PS&E, this is significantly below that. Staff worked and spent a lot of time working with the engineers, Berwood Engineering. Gregory Harris is here this evening if you have any questions, to discuss the design fees and make sure that they were as hopefully close as possible to what they will actually be. There are four project scopes that are clearly identified and that are attached as part of this. What we're doing is we're actually not approving a contract as much as we're approving a scope of work. Kerwood actually already has a contract in place, an annual multi-year contract in place. But one of the things we want to do is we want to get a little bit of a jump start. We will not begin the work until the bond financing is in place. But we do want to hit the road running as soon as that does take place, and we anticipate that happening within the next couple of weeks. So we're looking for an action this evening, items 1 through 4 on the recommended action.
Can we approve those as one item, or do they have to be broken out?
I think you can just adopt that recommendation if that's the board's preference.
What was the total work?
868-760. It's at the bottom of the agenda report. And just to point out, these are indicated in the capital improvement program budget. These are not new things we're bringing to you. These are part of the budget we previously brought to the board.
Great. I'll just make a general comment with regards to Harwood Engineering and the fact that Greg specifically actually was part of the original designer of our current wastewater system that we have over at Plant 2, and so his familiarity with it is a good thing for us as we add to it, understanding how it was built, how it flows, how it moves, I think it's a definite benefit to use Herwood Engineering for this project rather than go someplace else, even though we didn't ask for any outside, just because of the knowledge and experience that he has with our facilities. So I think it's good that he's involved.
All right. I make a motion with that we ask that we adopt
public comment, please. It's okay. All right. We'll close public comment now. Go ahead.
All right. Sure. I'll make a motion we approve items 1 through 4 on the recommended action.
I'll second that.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Bree Savage here this evening, Tokyo and Field, the report. I believe this is for June and for May and June.
Correct.
Can you hear me?
Perfect.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'll just kind of combine them together. Thank you, Director Steele. President Steele, directors. Since I'm pissed to a class board meeting, I have to go out of town, I'll kind of combine both reports. Okay. But moving forward, things have been going fairly well. We are up to, our safety program is still going very well, up to over 1,038 days, counting safe work activities. That's over 44,000 hours of work hours that our staff has been working safely. And part of that is our safety training program that we do. We do safety training weekly. In the last couple of months, we've done training in respiratory. We had fork truck training. We had some out come out and train each individual at fork truck. Had certified. We had some town staff involved in that. Got them certified. We had some individuals come out and do some training also on belts and bearings and how to recognize tissues and how to deal with those. So we have been moving pretty aggressive on our training program to get the staff where they need to be to maintain their equipment that we need to take care of. On the water side, the last few months we've been doing various repairs. The biggest thing we did a yearly service on the generators, all standby generators that the community has here at the Willow Newport. It's both wastewater plants and at the standby generators. We had them serviced, checked, had them run, put load on them, so when we do have a power outage, which we hope we never do, that they're come on and we have no flips or issues during operation of those services. If you've been out and about, we've been doing some house cleaning at all the facilities. We've been doing some painting. You can notice out here, the bright yellow, safety yellow has been painted. We've been doing a lot of it plant too. We're down here, we're moving over to Newport. Doing general housekeeping, cleaning the cobwebs, hosing things down, power washing, and brighten them up and for the summer and getting ready for the fall. Generally, on the water side, our water production has been going up tremendously for the summer. We produced over 148 million gallons of water last month, and the previous month in May was around 128, so it has been increasing. This is our high demand time. Wastewater side. And back in May, we finished a major work on our UV system. Totally rehabbed both sides, replaced all the lamps, and got it up, got it cleaning, and got it running. Just doing some yearly maintenance and fixing some issues that have been in the past. We did some repairs onto the biosolids truck. Since back there to be watering, we had to replace some chains and racks on it. We did a yearly submersible pump. We pulled every submersible pump in the lift stations at all 15 lift stations. We pulled them up, checked them, de-ragged them if they needed to be, checked the impellers on them, and to make sure they stay in working order. Our wastewater usage has been standing pretty steady. We've had a little bit of increase. We treated a little bit over received a little bit over 44 million gallons of water last night. We have started the new year contract year on our collection. We have flushed about 3,500 feet so far, but we will start in the fall to pick up that pace a little bit. And we have been doing some testing on some degreaser for the lift stations and sewer lines. So hopefully once we get the grease locked down and gone, we can put some degreaser in it and keep it gone. So we've been doing some trial runs on that with a vendor. On our wastewater lab, in the month of May, we had one violation. We had a 30 on our 7-day quarterly form. We have no reason why we had it. We just had a blip, but we cleaned the system. We had the system running, and for some unknown reason, we had a high number come in, and it went right back down. You can see back in June, we're back down to our normal range. We're well below our ranges on everything else, and we are continuing to do our PMs, keeping up on those. We did a little over 266 last month. Had about 14 call outs, and that's on just minor issues, and about it. Questions?
Before you go with that, I'd really like to make note of the housekeeping efforts that Veolia and Bernie in particular have commissioned, and I want to thank you for them. I know that Virgil has commented to me about how great it looks. I think he sent an email over to Bernie as well. Mm-hmm. But if any of you have ever been down to Plant 1 or Plant 2 lately, please give us a call. We'll take you for a ride. You can ride down there and take a look at it. It's a completely different place. So I just wanted to make sure Bernie gets recognized for that.
I was just going to say, Bernie, I wanted to thank you for giving us the report and playing those for us.
Okay.
Yeah. We actually, it doesn't go in one ear and out the other. Number one, you guys are doing a great job. Point that out. I appreciate it for one. I have to ask you a question. I always ask, are we at full strength?
We have full strength and one because I have a temp guy helping me doing
good
all the
time. No, really, thank you.
And I was wanted to ask the board, is there anything you wanted to see on this report? You know, again, I know we've been kind of, you know, hidden, but if you want to see some graphs or pictures or...
No, this was the way you gave your report, no. Is it to me?
Is this what we need?
I would echo Dr. Simon's comments about the job you guys are doing. With regards to the call form, is there going to be any violation fines or anything levied because of that?
We're not expecting any. We like I said, we do not know the reason we had it. Just came in. We met with our lab. We did a split sample with another lab to find out maybe it was a lab error. It was not. The split sample came in. We don't know what it is. So at this point, we have not heard back from our regulatory agency. We're expecting nothing, but we don't know.
And then on our daily discharge, June's MGDs lower, usually we're right around that 2.0, 1.8 something. Is any idea why that might be so?
Yes. Because in the previous, we were taking a flow reading off of our effluent flow chamber that goes into the UV system. Now we're actually taking it from the discharge that goes out to the river, and after doing some investigation and reading the permit, it's supposed to be at the last point of treatment where it goes out to the river. So we made those changes because where it was taken out previously through the effluent before it goes into the UV system, that water sometimes is diverted back to the ponds in the back. So we were counting diversion water, and we shouldn't be doing that.
Good question.
Great. And that's good for us, though.
Yes, and
it gives us a little more cushion, right?
Right, and if you look at the inflow and effluent, they're pretty close now. What's coming in is what's going out.
Okay. Then two other things. The grease buildup that we had found along Willow Lake and specifically near Marlin and also I think further down where we had the really restricted, that all was cleaned out, correct?
And that's been cleaned, and we're hitting that like every quarter to just keep it.
Without scoping it, of course, again, you probably can't see how quickly things are building up. Is there a way to inspect that without having to just go in with a camera?
No, just going back. That's why we've been doing testing on that degreaser I just talked about, on uh-huh. Lift Station G, which feeds that line to Lift Station F, and that's our trouble spot. So that's what we've been doing, the degreaser.
And that's a great segue into my next comment. And I've noticed you've been making a home at Lift Station F lately.
The last few weeks we've been there.
Yeah. Are there new pumps going in there? Are we resolving that issue? Or we, because that's such a critical lift station for that whole side of town. How's that being addressed?
We've made some recommendations to the town, so that's the town and the board's decision how they want to go with that. But we have, everybody knows that lift station is fairly old, 30 plus years old. It rags up 5 lift stations, feed that lift station, so it's pretty critical to be there to go to lift plant 1. We had some ragging issues last week, week before last, and again this week. We had to go back down in there, make some adjustments, pull some rags out on the discharge side, but it's definitely something that needs to be addressed here in the near future.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Good job, Bernie. Thanks for the update.
I just have one quick one. Do we put a fork in well 5 yet, or is there anything new with that?
Yeah, I have to turn that over to the town staff.
Okay. That's it.
Thank you. Thank
you. Well 5 continues to produce.
All right, go ahead. Let's see. Manager's reports, please.
All right, I want to talk to you a little bit about the dewatering project that we have going out there at the biosolids. If you direct your attention to the screen there, this is shots that I'll be showing you from the beginning of the project until we yesterday. This is just the start where they showed up on site first day and a few months ago. And this is where they're starting to grade, remove some of the asphalt, some of the dirt. Stop me if you have any questions, if something, this is another shot from a different angle. This is in front of the current solar buildings. Just unloading some more equipment. This is the soil that they've dug out to the certain grade level that they need to go to. Up in the upper right, you see a dark streak there. That's your peat soil. Peat soil is very dark, and so that's the peat soil that is underneath the thin layer of clay. This is asphalt that we built up, but then past that you can see the peat soil again, the darker colored. There's more peat soil there. We have to remove the peat soil. In order to build anything structure-wise, you can't build a structure over peat soil, because peat soil keeps decompositing, it keeps breaking down. And so if you built a structure on it, it's going to keep sinking and sinking. So hence why Highway 4 going to Stockton, you see a lot of dips in the road because it's peat soil, so it keeps dipping there.
It's not that deep, though. Is that peat? What, is it a couple feet?
It varies. In this particular case, it was 4.5 feet. So it varies throughout our 70 acres that we have there. Mm-hmm. And they're just here, they're grading. They're getting close to the existing building and trying to get down to the certain depth that they need. Here they are measuring. You can see the peat soil there again. This is built-up clay. Every time people build poles, we have the pole contractor drop off dump loads of clay. The peat soil was down further than we wanted to be, so now we have to build that up. Once we reach good clay material, we now have to put new clay material where we took the peat out, build that up to the certain height for our structure to sit on. So what they're doing here is excavating, removing that clay soil that we had built up past few years, using that as our material base. If we didn't have this, we would have to be trucking in clay soil. This is one of the pads for your belt press. This is all the piping that we put underground, and then you put some cement collars around that. This is some of the electrical conduits, main electrical conduits. These are your 480 conduits. This is some of the electrical conduits you have under your pad. It almost looks like a spaghetti underneath there. Some of it's, a lot of it's 110. Some of it's even signals, meaning like to an automated, could be like a SCADA system, a signal wire. So some of these conduits are signals, some are power.
You don't mix the low voltage with the other voltage?
You cannot in the same conduit. Okay. You cannot do that. These are your 4-inch power conduits that you have coming in.
and your smaller ones generally will be your signal ones coming out. You put sand on top of that, that spaghetti that we saw there, and that sets your base so you can start to pour your concrete. This is the belt press that we had ordered way in advance from a company called Aramod out of Kansas. And it's pretty interesting, probably made in the USA, California. Pretty neat.
It's perfect.
So that was on the trucker as he came across the U.S. Here's what it looks like, set back a little further. This is some of the other equipment that goes with that belt press. This is the forming to pour that pad. So it's ready to be, concrete to be poured into it. Here's the pad poured and some of the equipment already installed on it. This is the beginning of the pumping operations for our solar pad. We had graded all that peat out. Now we're pouring concrete. Generally at each time we pour concrete is generally about 60 to 70 yards in the morning that we're doing this. And this is one of the first sections that we poured. We have five sections all together. This is the first one that we were pouring. You cannot be off more than a quarter of an inch, an eighth, a quarter of an inch. Of all, when you measure that, it's 43 feet wide, and I think each one is around 50 or 60 feet in length. You cannot be more than a quarter to eighth inch. That concrete's got to be that low.
Wow.
There they are finishing the outside of that. This is just another view of that. And then concrete trucks lined up, and then pump truck putting that in. This is the front end of that solar pad, solar building. The rebar that's going up and down, that'll be your walls. This is the floor. This is showing you the rebar that's underneath that. And that little kind of gray strip there. Anyway, the little gray strip right underneath some of that wood, that's a door track that you have to embed into the concrete. This little white thing there is foam. Right underneath it's kind of a gray, about 4 to 6 inches wide. That's called a water stop. Because your next joint is going to be on next to that existing concrete, you want to make sure no water goes through the crack and goes below that slab. So that's called a water stop in there. This is a new thing for us. We extended the building out about another 12 to 18 inches to be able to, if you build slab number 4, you run your rebar ties into this little metal piece, you pull them out and you screw them in. This will give you a good enough
anchor.
Well, it's anchorage, but also the load bearing, to spread the load and so forth. You can see they hopscotch, they pour one section, skip the section, put the next. The reason you do that for is our spec says once you pour that concrete, it has to set for 14 days to allow for any shrinkage before you can pour any concrete next to it. This is the last pour that we did on Tuesday. That's the fifth pour. And this is what the slab looks like with the belt press sitting on. Tomorrow, the steel frame building will be delivered and they'll start to erect that during the week. And this is just a picture that I had out of sequence, and again that's just removing the peat soil, showing you the how deep it is and then how dark it is. And that's it. Any questions?
Sure. Just going back to when you said like an eighth inch or quarter inch is a big deal. There's going to be settling and all that kind of stuff anyway, right?
We shouldn't have any. Very little.
And why does it have to be so perfect?
Because of your moles that are underneath there. They have to travel and they have the paddles to turn.
Yep.
You don't want them hitting the concrete. As they move through there, you don't want to have a little bump in there so
your
paddles don't hit the concrete. Because it'll chip the concrete then. question? I mean, there's been some other sites within California, as you all know. We were the first in the western states to put this system in, and so we had a very tight spec then. Some other cities have followed us afterwards, and they've had to redig up that concrete because it didn't meet the specifications.
Gregory. Can you go back to the form savers picture?
Form saver was.
One thing I want to point out is during design or during construction, the town moved forth with the concept of building out the treatment plant under the bond measure. And this is actually a cost-saving measure. We paid a change order now to do this. Those rebars allow us to build the infrastructure. Originally, it was envisioned we built structure 3, and then sometime a long time from now, we come back and build 4. By modifying it so we can tie the structures together, say, build a common wall, and build them all as one unit for the next phase, we're saving $1 million over the construction of that. So it was like a $10,000 change order here, but because the direction from the staff became clear that, hey, we're going to go forth and just build it, we were really able to save a lot of money on this structure instead of build one complete and then a separate completely independent, several feet apart and all this stuff. So this allows us now to tie them all together, and we'll save about $1 million over the two, building the two together.
Fantastic.
Any questions?
I think it looks really good, Virgil. Thank you.
Like I said, if any of you want to go down and take a visit, we'd be more than happy to show it off.
For it's looking really great.
What's that?
Flying up to my skateboard.
You can skateboard in right now. Just make sure you have your insurance certificate in place.
Longboard.
And your.
All right. Good job. That's one. Moving right along.
I've got 4 items before you this evening. I've only 2 listed, but there's 2 more, and I'm going to not go in order. the first one is, earlier this week, I sent to the board, under separate cover, a copy of the preliminary draft, the capacity fee study. It's anticipated that that will be before the board for adoption, consideration, approval at the next meeting on August the 1st. We are in the final process stages of identifying some missing EDUs, and once we get those plugged in, we should have a fairly complete document. The second item is also under separate cover. I believe yesterday, Calista sent to you a copy of the Regional Water Quality Control Board inspection report. That report was, if you read between the lines, it was really an excellent report. They had one comment that had to do with some algae on the clarifiers. Clarifiers are routinely clean, and they hit us probably on the day before they would have normally been clean. But they are, this time of the year, it's one of those things that's very hard to keep up with. So I think you should all be proud of the fact that report came in as nicely as it did. The other item is the commercial and large user accounts and the delinquent accounts that we've discussed in the past. We have received either payment or commitment of payment on the delinquent accounts. In fact, 2 delinquent accounts. One of them came in and paid down by 50% of their bill. So from $18,000 to $9,000, we anticipate having the remainder of that paid off by the end of this calendar year. The other one, which was about $14,000, is now down to about $6,000. So that, and I received an email from the owner of that business plaza on Monday night, indicating that he would like to have that paid off by the end of this year as well. That's what he's shooting for. And that would bring us current on our 2 most delinquent accounts under those. With respect to the large water users that were not billed previously, we have sent letters out. We have subsequently sent another set of letters out as a reminder. To them, we have received payment from one of them, albeit a small association, Harbor Bay, and their bill was relatively small. The other, we have received calls and commitments from some of the other users, schools, for example, that they will be paying within the next 2 to 3 weeks. So we are still working on some of the larger accounts, and there's some confusion there. And while I was on vacation, Dina had been talking to the representatives of those accounts, and so we should have, moving forward, we are making progress on those, but I think the biggest thing is the two accounts that have been delinquent for some time are becoming current quite rapidly. The last item is...
Before you get to the point.
Go ahead.
First one something. Of the large water users is in the middle of being sold right now. Now we've got a new manager and we're trying to buy it. Whether they sold it or not, I don't know yet. But I don't know if that's going to check.
So long as the property owner still owns the property owner gets the bill, not the individual.
It's Gorovic's responsibility, not the state.
It's down. Allocated by space that they do, and it's we allocate it by space, but it's all out. But it's the last item is last year we had the communications committee, and some of those items that came up were the newsletter, and with the adoption of the budget this year, we did approve, the board did authorize moving forward that we will be moving forward with the biannual newsletter. I've got someone in mind that I've received a proposal from who does quite good work, and actually she lives in San Jose but has a vacation home here in Discovery Bay, and so I got to know her and her family through that way and saw some of her work and was quite impressed, and so I'm looking possibly to have her do that work for us. One of the other things we talked about were during the budget process, if you recall, had to do with the message boards. Whether they be mobile message boards or the permanent message boards. So at the budget meetings, the board had asked that before we make any decision on that, we come back to the board with some options and recommendations. We'll be doing that in the next couple of months. The other thing is there was Director Madison had requested that we initiate something of a newsletter or an article in the local newspapers. Ted Giacopetti does one, I believe, in the Delta Sun-Times. Does he also do it in the... No, he does it in the Delta Sun-Times. Kind of an update on what's going on in the school district over the course of the previous month. And Director Simon asked if we can go ahead and move that forward, and he actually drafted something a month ago. Director Madison, I'm sorry, drafted something a month ago.
I'm much better looking.
What did I say?
Director Simon, but I'm much better looking than Director Simon.
For the record.
And so
did you get that, Carol?
I went ahead and Jim forwarded it to me, reviewed it, edited it, and went ahead and forwarded it back to Jim, who Director Madison, who forwarded it off to the newspaper. And unfortunately, it was not supposed to include his name as a byline, but I think that the editor of that newspaper thought that they were doing him a favor by doing so. And so when it ran in the Discovery Bay Press, that byline was not there. But I would like to see board direction on what you would like me to do with respect to that monthly article that Director Madison would like to pursue on a regular basis.
You want that right now?
We can discuss it later if you like. We can agendize it for a later meeting.
I think that's the plan. Let's put that on the next agenda.
Okay, we can do that.
And you guys get your thoughts together on the artwork and the layout and the format and how it's going to happen.
Well, that the newsletter is something that's entirely different. I
understand that it's the newspaper article.
Correct.
That's going to be very similar. Exactly. 500 words or less. Okay. Thank you. Any other reports on right now? Okay. Well, I'm going to go on here right now. Council, please.
No report, sir.
Any committee updates?
I don't think we have a committee meeting right now.
No, we haven't got a committee. We've got a community center committee that's still active. We should have a communication committee that's still active. Is there any of that? Talk about having a rec community committee start up? Nothing? Okay. Well, let's look at our calendar and see when we're going to meet again on this committees for the next meeting. We can give an update on our calendar. All right, any correspondence that stands out here? Yeah. Don Flint has had a public records request. Thank you, Don. And then
Future agenda items. I look forward to getting an update on the emergency preparedness plan. I'd like to have an agenda item on as far as the phone system.
On the emergency preparedness plan, I would ask that we get an opportunity to talk about that a little bit, Rick, because I am actually going for my MEMS certification, and in order to do that, I have to have a practicum, and one of the practicums, maybe I may be able to donate some time to the town to work on that as part of a project I need to do to be rated for MEMS.
Okay. Director Steele, President Steele, Director Graves, Vice President Graves, they will be on your next agenda. It's already scheduled to be there. The emergency operations
plan completed.
Will come to you as a draft, as a final draft at the next agenda.
Okay.
Yeah, all right. Anything else you guys?
All right. I have a question.
Yes, please.
I'd like to ask the board to consider putting an agenda item together to review the property tax dollars that are sent to the county. And the reason for this is to take and get a handle on what type of services that we're receiving from the county in lieu of the funds that are going in. My estimation is somewhere, it's $20 million plus, could be 25, could be 15. I personally don't think we're getting 10-15% of that in services. There's no way that we'd get all that money back, there's no question about it. But in order to proceed, to see if we can't get some funds reallocated back to the community, we would need to have an analysis made and then make a presentation of some sort to the supervisors. A good example would be in Supervisor Pifo's request to Sheriff Livingston to allocate some funds for the SRO. Some of that could be augmented by funds that are coming out and proven that they're coming out of the County Discovery Bay. So I'd like to ask that there be an agenda item. Not sure how to put it together. It could be a task force of some sort to work with staff to do an analysis so you could move forward to get a feel for those funds.
Just a point of order, you have no jurisdiction
for
property taxes. That would be LAFCO and directly with the county.
Well, it's not jurisdiction. All it is a request from the community.
This is a community service district that doesn't have any jurisdiction over property tax and allocations. That's done by LAFCO and the county.
But if we could make a request from the community to the county to reallocate funds. How do we communicate with Supervisor Pifo's office?
You contact Supervisor Pifo.
I agree. But this board represents this county, it represents this town.
It represents the community services district, that it has very specific powers. Mr. President, I have no mind.
No problem. All right. I think for your point.
Okay.
Any other agenda items? Okay. All right. Well, at this time, I think we're going to adjourn the meeting.
Not yet.
Oh, we had to end it earlier?
No.
Excuse me, I'm out of order. All
right. Can we get that on tape?
All right. We're going to return to closed session.
We're going to go into closed session. The board is adjourning into closed session regarding action item P1.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Yes.
Are we ready? Move on?
Yes, sir.
President Steele, board members, the board has reconvened in closed session regarding action item P1. All five of the board members were present during the entirety of the closed session. There is no reportable action at this time. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. At this time, I'd like to adjourn the meeting.